On CLNS Media. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Careless Whispers. My name is Matt Rury. As usual, I'm here with my man, Calvin Chamberlain. And tonight, there's a big game coming. There's a large game coming. You may even call it a super game. That's not where we start, but we will get there. Don't you worry. We will be talking Patriots-Eagles on Sunday. But we start with the NBA, and Calvin, there was a huge trade that went down, but we don't start there either, do we? We're going to start with the Celtics. How's it going?
It's all right. I'm a little tired. I still haven't really had a Royal Rumble-related party on Sunday, and I still haven't quite recovered, it appears. So they're just left behind on sleep, drank way too much, and didn't sleep at all on Sunday night. And then
did you host that party?
I did not, no. Okay. But I was a guest at someone else's party. My cousin won the big gambling pool. So it's really,
I was
going to
say, did you win the Royal Rumble? I did not, no.
My cousin won. Yeah.
I did not win the Royal Rumble either, in case you didn't know.
Okay, so you also went to a party.
I did. I did go to a party, and it was just a few of us there. Well, I wouldn't call it a party. It was more of a gathering of a few people.
You only need a few people to gamble, I always say. But
that's
any case,
true.
I included the combination of way too many alcohols. So I still haven't completely recovered from it, and thus I'm pretty tired tonight. You probably tell by the low energy in my voice. But that's okay.
Uh-huh.
We got stuff to talk about.
We do. We do have stuff to talk about.
Yeah. So the Celtics topic, I guess, is pretty simple. I'm just wondering, with the state of the union with the Celtics, they've been playing a little bit better lately, right? After not playing so well,
seem to have righted the ship a little bit. And I mean, they didn't play very well. There's always been a lull for pretty much every team. Not everybody can play well every night in this league. We all know that. But the Celtics did go through a rough stretch for about a week or so. And they seem to have figured it out again.
But definitely, as well as the defense has been playing, they've started to have some issues offensively, right? Do you think that this team is – I mean, obviously they're in position considering what their trove of assets is. But I guess my question to you is, do you want Danny Ainge to be looking to make a move right now, or do you think it's a smart decision is to just sort of sit on it and see what happens?
I mean, this every time we have a trade discussion on this show, I always preempt my response to you with, depends on the trade, right? And I'm not going to do that anymore, because I'm just going to make the assumption that if Danny Ainge pulls the trigger on a deal, it's going to be a good trade. I think his track record speaks for itself at this point. So I'm not even gonna do that at this point and bore you with that. I'm gonna say, make the right deal, as usual, which he has done. And so yes, I think they should go make a deal. But I'm not mortgaging the future for a rental player. Let's put it that way. And regardless of, I mean, it depends on who you're bringing in, I guess. But if you're gonna bring in a guy for just a few months and risk the fact that he might walk away because you're trying to make a run at the NBA Finals right now, I would say pump the brakes on that.
Yeah,
but I would be open to trading one of their young stars for an even bigger star if that deal was available. So I don't want him to make a deal just to try and improve a little bit for this season. If it improves them for the future, then by all means, I'm in on that.
Yeah, that's actually what I was wondering. I mean, obviously, why would you be against trading for somebody better than the Sonic team right now, right? That part of that's an easy answer. That goes without saying. I guess really what I was wondering was the other part of it, which is like, because you know that obviously you've been doing post-game shows with me and this show for years, so you know that I tend to be more of a like go for it advocate than many. You know what I mean? I tend to be like along the sides of
risk taker. You just said it with the gambling. You're in.
Well, I just feel like if you can, like, I don't think that I don't like the zero sum game that like a lot of people, not necessarily general managers, but like fans seem to have adopted, in like certain media members, where like if this one move doesn't guarantee us a win over the Warriors, then we shouldn't make this move at all. You know what I mean?
Sure. I don't really subscribe to that, and I think that improving for the future is the way to go, even if it doesn't make you better than the Warriors right now. I'm not trying to say that, but I'm also not looking to try and beat the Warriors in the NBA Finals and then have a hard time in 2021.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree that there's a balance to it, not necessarily completely mortgaging the future. Like, obviously, you know, there's a risk-reward in every scenario. Like, we just talked about, like, I don't know, did I say this on the air with you, like I think I did, right? That the Cavs should absolutely trade that Isaiah Thomas. I mean that mm-hmm. Brooklyn Nets pick. There's no question in my mind that they should do that in order to try to win a championship this year, or you know, at the very least, try to show LeBron that you're dedicated to winning. And if he walks,
right,
then that's a consequence of like going all in to try to win. But I don't know, in the Celtics case, I'm actually sort of agreeing with you this year. It doesn't feel like, and you know, maybe something will present itself, but it doesn't feel like, just considering the people who are on the market, and yes, the Celtics have assets to trade for anyone, but like there doesn't seem to be the right player who could help this team out right now in, you know, would be willing to stay in Boston long term, that I can think of off the top of my head that would make this team, that would fit into what this team does. I mean, obviously they're not going to trade with the Cavs again, and I'm not sure Kevin Love makes sense for them at this point anyway. So I'm, I look at the guys, you know, Anthony Davis is still a pipe dream at this point, right? Maybe by this time,
sure,
next trade deadline.
Well,
New
Orleans just made it clear that they are not going to be trading Anthony Davis right now, because they just traded for Nikola Mirotic, and I believe that they're trying to stay good. They're in the playoffs right now, and I think that even though DeMarcus Cousins just went down, and we'll get into that in a few minutes, New Orleans is trying to stay relevant right now. They're not going to be trading anybody away. They just made a deal for a player that they feel is going to be able to contribute to them right now. So New Orleans is not trading Anthony Davis. Nobody should think that he's coming to Boston this year. It's just not going to happen. I don't foresee them falling far enough out of the playoff hunt by the trade deadline, which is in just a couple of weeks, to make any sort of impact on the way they feel about their star player. He's not going anywhere. Get it out of your heads, everybody out there. But the Cleveland thing that you mentioned, there's a couple different things going on there. They should trade the pick because, A, it's not going to necessarily mortgage their future, because I don't think that pick is going to be that great anyway. It'll be top 10 possibly, but the way that Cleveland drafts, they have not been able to find players that will contribute to their success, and they've also not really groomed any of their own players either, if you notice that. The other thing is they're already there as a contender against Golden State, especially if they can find a way to get Isaiah Thomas right and get his scoring punch available, or make it available to them. They've already been to the finals. They're already a team that is there and is looking to put themselves back there and be over the top and be able to win again. So them making a short-term move makes more sense than the Celtics.
Yeah, well, especially if, again, I look, you know, that top 10 pick, even though it's not number one, so that's significant. But it's still going to have a lot of value. You can get, like, you know, multiple good. You could probably get a good. I don't know. I don't have the trade machine in front of me, but you could probably get two of the defender types that you want, or you know, you could probably get. I can't even think about who's available. And I guess this goes back to my original point about the Celtics before we sort of went all through the woods here. That Mirotić trade failed, by the way, and I do want to get to why it failed because it's interesting. But back to my point about the Celtics is like I don't, and maybe I can look at some of these teams that are bad and say like Orlando, what would it take to get like Aaron Gordon, for example? Well, the Celtics already have young guys in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Like they don't need to go in that direction. They also have the number one seed in the East right now. Why would you, even to help your future, why would you jeopardize that, especially considering Horford's age? They're in this weird scenario right now that it seems to me that it would be difficult for them to get better now without mortgaging their future in some sort of way, but they're also not quite good enough now to make it worth it. So they're in this, you know, out of all the last, I've been somewhat critical of Danny Ainge for, like, sitting on his assets and not doing enough in the past, although, you know, obviously in this last summer through now, he's been better at that. But this just seems like it's not the time for them.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. I'm totally with you on that one. And it seems as though he has a plan, and he's been building on this plan for the last few years. And even though the personnel on the roster has changed quite a bit, even from just last year, he is finding similar types of players, and he's been improving the roster each year. And I think that he's following through with a bigger vision that he has. So at this point, Calvin, I'm trusting whatever Danny Ainge does, because I think that it's more a product of the coaching staff and Brad Stevens getting the best out of whatever player gets put on his roster. I truly believe that if you put Russell Westbrook, James Harden, name a superstar player, you put him on a Brad Stevens team, that guy's going to be the MVP. And Kyrie Irving is going to be in the discussion this year. I think that he's shining.
Not.
He's going to be in the discussion. I'm not saying that he's going to be even
top
three.
I mean,
a top five guy. Obviously, he's the best player
five?
On his team. Definitely. Top five MVP.
Top five.
Kyrie Irving. Absolutely.
You're saying right
They're
now.
Not, this team is nowhere near. I'm not saying Kyrie for Isaiah at this point, but they're nowhere near the one seed if Kyrie Irving is not on this team. Just take him off the roster. They're nowhere close. So he has to be in the discussion for me.
Those are two different things. I don't disagree with you. What I'm asking you is, do you, Matt Roy, think that Kyrie Irving is going to finish top five in the MVP race? That's all I want to know. Yes, you're saying yes, that he will get the number of votes required to finish in the top five.
He probably won't get the votes, but I think
that's highly unlikely.
Probably won't get the votes, but I believe that he should. Anyway, we're going down the rabbit hole here. My point was that Brad Stevens is the driving force behind this team succeeding the way that they do and having pretty much every player that comes through the roster overachieve and get absolutely the most that they can out of themselves. So Danny Ainge can do whatever he wants, and I think that people are going to be impressed with what this team puts on the floor.
Yeah, I agree with that part of it. All right, well, the Celtics have not made a trade yet, so we'll keep our next week is our last show before the trade deadline. We're going to just come up with a bunch of wild scenarios for you there. I know I already promised to do that with the Lakers, but I've been too lazy. I'm about 90% certain that the Lakers will do a trade before the deadline, and they definitely need to for a number of reasons. So, you know, we may get into next week. We're going to have a shorter show this week. But there was a gigantic trade in the NBA that we haven't got to yet, right? Blake Griffin was traded.
Amazing
Blake Griffin
stuff.
Was traded. Yeah. Clippers traded Blake Griffin. Let me just pull it up real quick. He got traded to the Detroit Pistons along with Bryce Johnson and Willie Reed. No idea Willie Reed was on.
Doesn't matter.
On
fillers.
The
They're all fillers.
You're right. Does not matter at all. Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, what's this guy's name? Bojan Marjanovic, and a first and second round draft pick. The first round draft pick is only protected through the first four picks, which means that that pick's probably going to go off because the Pistons aren't bad enough to beat bottom four. So let's just say a lottery pick, right? Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, Marjanovic, lottery pick. I mean, this trade is hilarious to me, Ray. Love it.
So you think? So you know what? I hope that the people that were saying this on Twitter were being sarcastic and just trying to get people riled up. But I believe that there were people that think that the Clippers won this trade.
Right. Almost everybody thinks that the Clippers won this trade. I'm surprised by this reaction. It's fascinating to me. I think that there's a legitimate argument for it. I'm not going to lie. I haven't decided what I think of the trade overall, but I, besides the fact that I find it hilarious, but the thing that I find funny about it has nothing to do with the trade itself. It has to do with the fact...
The only way you could believe that this trade was better for the Clippers than for Detroit is if you think that Blake Griffin is not worth the deal that the Clippers gave him. Because that's the only way that this could be good for them. They're getting out of that contract. Sign Avery Bradley. Maybe he improves. But if you're looking straight up, the way that these guys have been playing this year compared to the superstar potential of Blake Griffin still, how can you believe that the Clippers won this trade unless you don't actually think that Blake Griffin is that good? So, I don't know. I've just seen people who... in the past have been supporters of Blake Griffin now saying that the Clippers won the trade. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't see where they're coming from. But personally, I don't know what Detroit is doing either, because I don't think that Drummond and Griffin are going to play well together. I historically have not liked Blake Griffin. So I feel like I'm allowed to say that this trade was won by the Clippers. But these other people who were supporting him, I just don't get it. So give me the devil's advocate argument about why they won this trade from somebody who thinks that Blake Griffin is good. That's where I'm coming from. I don't get it.
Okay, yeah, or a couple of things. Here's the thing. Again, I need to, like, go back in time before this trade happened to the offseason when Blake Griffin was a free agent and the kind of shenanigans that the Clippers were pulling to re-sign this guy. They brought him into an empty Staples Center with his number retired in a sort of like a fake Hall of Fame that they constructed for like all of the achievements, Blake Griffin Clipper for life. They printed up T-shirts with the caption that said Pioneers with Blake Griffin's face alongside President Obama and Martin Luther King. This was in July. This was in July. We're in January now. Look, this I understand that this was before Jerry West. They brought Jerry West in, and now a few months later, look, all the rumors were about that DeAndre Jordan was going to get traded. DeAndre Jordan was going to get traded, and maybe he still will get traded. I don't think that you can rule that out, although I'm skeptical. Mainly for the reasons that I think he'll be too hard to move. All that being said, Ray, it's like they already decided they didn't want. They just kicked him to the curb, like he was a piece of. They traded him for, like you said, they traded him for a couple of sandwiches, basically. I mean, Tobias Harris is all right. I think his numbers are a little inflated in Detroit. He's sort of getting more shots than he should on a good team scenario. He's a pretty good defender, I'll grant you. Avery Bradley, I like Avery Bradley, but he's going to be a free agent. He's gone.
I love Avery Bradley, and you know what? Who else loves Avery Bradley? Doc Rivers apparently loves Avery Bradley. And even though Bradley's had a down year and he had some personal allegations come out about him, still love him as a basketball player. And as far as I've heard, aside from this transgression, he's an upstanding person as well. So, we don't need to get into that, but we know that Doc Rivers loves Bradley. So my question now is, do they re-sign him? Is he going to command more money than he deserves? I mean, is he going to actually play well for the Clippers? And is this – or is this Doc Rivers kind of doing what he's been doing a little bit by some accounts, Matt Barnes, and sort of playing favorites? He did it with his son. It's possible he'll do it with Avery Bradley. Calvin, I am going to find it really hard to believe if Doc Rivers is the head coach of the Los Angeles Clippers in 2019, because this thing looks like another rebuild, and we all know what happened in Boston when they decided to sort of reconstruct a little bit. They didn't call it a rebuild. They called it a reconstruction. It sounds better for some reason. He walked right away. He ran as far as he could, all the way to the Clippers, all the way to Los Angeles. Do the Lakers need a coach?
Right.
Are they going to fire Luke Walton? I bet Doc is gone, because this thing is looks like it's falling apart really fast.
Yeah, you might be right about Doc being gone, but you know what Doc's not going to be gone doing? He's not going to be gone because he wants to be gone. If he gets gone, it's because he gets fired. Doc, the difference between, you know, what do you go to the Clippers, 2011? Whatever year that was. Versus now, it's like Doc Rivers' name does not have the same cachet as did back then. He just got buried by Chris Paul in the offseason for showing nepotism to his son, and a lot of people agreed with it. He lost his power as general manager with the Clippers. Look, Doc Rivers is going right back to TNT if he's not the Clippers character. I don't know where you think Doc Rivers is going to get hired, but that's not happening anytime soon. But back to the Blake trade itself. You hit the nail on the head. The reason why people think this is a good deal, and it kind of speaks to a bigger issue of what's going on in the NBA, is the Clippers gave him the Supermax. Right, I'm looking at in this offseason, Griffin was coming off an injury. He's been injured for multiple games this year, right, since then. I actually think Blake Griffin's played pretty well. Like, here's Blake Griffin. I think he'll be fine with Drummond because he's a much better passer. He's opened up his range to three-point range. He does those little lobs with DeAndre Jordan that I think would work even better with Andre Drummond because he's a good ball handler. He's creative with the ball. He has like that Ben Simmons. You're going to have that Ben Simmons Embiid thing going, except Griffin can shoot. So he can actually space the floor, unlike Ben Simmons. I think he'll work fine in Detroit. But my thing is, like, how much – look, he's going to be 29 in March. He's going to be 33 when the contract ends. He's making $29 million this year, then $32, $34, $36, and $38 million in 21-22. I don't know. Look, this NBA Supermax is great for superstars. You can give it to one guy. And, like, the whole marketing push behind it was for, like, it gives, you know, the Sacramento Kings of the world, even though it didn't work out with DeMarcus, a better chance to keep DeMarcus Cousins because he can make so much more money in Sacramento. Yeah, that's great from the position of keeping your one star, but to give a guy the Supermax, you have to leverage so much of your team's contract that, like, that guy better be LeBron or Russell Westbrook for it to be worth it. And I don't think Blake is. I think when Blake signed that contract, I said it was a mistake. I remember talking to you when Gordon Hayward, you know, when they gave the money to Gordon Hayward. Blake was up for a free agent as well, and I was like, well, you know, do the Celtics have interest in him? And then it turned out that, like, the Clippers offered him just so much more money that wasn't even going to be a conversation. But, like, I remember thinking, like, how much will the Clippers offer him? Maybe the regular – I had no thought that they would offer him that much, especially considering that Chris Paul was a free agent as well. And it's like they already realized what a bad idea it was. I don't see how this guy is worth that much money, like, 3 years from now.
Yeah, I've never thought this way about Blake Griffin. I've always thought that they shouldn't have paid him that much, and he was overpaid. And I mean, people praise this guy, and honestly, Calvin, I don't see it. I feel like he's a pretty one-dimensional player on offense. And yes, he's expanded his game to be able to knock down shots. He shoots three once in a while. He's become a much better shooter in his career. But I want to see more from him defensively. There are times where he looks like he's given up, and his mind is not in the game, and I don't know what to attribute that to, but I've just never looked at Blake Griffin as a superstar type of player in this league. So that's where I sit on this thing, and I still don't feel that way. I mean, maybe he and Drummond will create havoc in the Eastern Conference, and Detroit will go on a run now, and maybe they'll give the Celtics problems. Who knows? And I will have to eat my words. But to me, I've never really thought that he deserved that huge contract. So that's why I feel like this is good for the Clippers. I just don't understand the people out there that think Blake Griffin is excellent and also think this is a good deal for the Clippers. So either way.
Yeah, there's another element to this, Rory, which is, like, and you might find this ridiculous, but there's this notion that if certain people, if they manage to trade DeAndre, or DeAndre doesn't pick up his play option at the end of this season, which is like $22 million, so I can't imagine DeAndre not picking it up, but whatever, they think that he might. There's certain scenarios in which the Clippers can get far enough under the cap, letting Bradley walk, a couple of other guys. I think Tobias Harris might have a player option as well. So if they get enough things to break their way, or if they make another move or two, I think maybe trading Lou Williams might be part of it. The Clippers can get enough under the cap to offer a player a max contract. And there's a notion that the Clippers are trying to set this scenario up so that they can offer that said max contract to LeBron James in the hopes that he'll come to the Clippers instead of the Lakers, because LeBron James hates LeVar Ball. Which I find that whole this whole like secondary aspect is
really bad. Oh boy. I love all these LeBron James rumors. I mean, and especially when, like, if Paul George gets involved in all this stuff in the offseason, I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of discussion about where he's going to go, etc. It's just, it's, and by love, I mean hate. I'm getting tired of it because this guy is going to keep going wherever he can, trying to win titles, I guess, or just trying to build his brand. Whatever brand that may be. I don't know where he's going to go with that. It's not Tom Brady. I'm getting sick of the LeBron hype. I always have been.
So
if he just runs off the Lakers or the Clippers, they're going to be a championship contender immediately. I think at this point in his career, we're seeing right now that it's not all that easy for him anymore. He can't just get a bunch of random guys around him and make them better compared to the super teams that are out there. So I just would find it hard to believe that LeBron going anywhere would be as big of a deal as it would be hyped up to be, because if he can't carry Cleveland back to that spot in the NBA Finals, which obviously doesn't happen yet. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I still believe that they should be the favorite to go to the NBA Finals, because I think they're going to figure things out, even though Kevin Love just got hurt, Calvin. He's out 6 to 8 weeks.
What?
He just got hurt tonight. Kevin Love broke his left hand.
Wow.
I'm seeing this on Twitter. Everybody's saying it at this point. He has a fracture of one of his fingers or something on the bridge of his hand or something like that. So, yeah, he's out 6 to 8 weeks, and it's going to be tough for them. And it looks as though LeBron James is vulnerable at this point. And we've been saying it for a couple of years that it's going to happen. It seems to be the perfect storm here in Cleveland, and it's happening. So I find it hard to believe that he would be able to just walk to a different team that is a struggling team, if it's the Lakers. And we'll see what happens with the Clippers for the next couple months, but they appear as though they're going to start struggling as well and just be able to turn them around and right the ship.
All right, I changed my mind. You guys need to trade for, like, Oladipo or Chris Dunn or somebody. Trade for
Kemba
Walker.
Now they need to make a deal?
Yeah, now the Celtics need to make a deal.
Because Kevin Love is out?
Yeah, Kevin Love is hurt. Well, my entire thought process changed. the change.
Even though that they could still potentially get to the finals with Kevin Love, I mean, aren't we ultimately talking about Golden State here and who you're trying to beat? I'm still not mortgaging the future for Oladipo, you know?
Jalen Brown for C.J. McCollum. Go, do it.
Ooh, I do like C.J. McCollum. That would be awesome. I would take that deal in a second.
I mean, I'm sure you'd have to own a pick, probably, but I mean, and you'd have to match salary, but whatever, could be done.
NBA trade machine, here I come. What's the next topic while I look at this trade?
No, you're gonna make something happen. Look, if you throw a trade up on me, you know I'm gonna love that. If you can put the economic pieces together on that, I'll be impressed. While we're doing a show. You're doing two things at once, a trade machine.
Yeah, I mean, what can I say? I'm going to start clicking on the buttons here.
Yeah.
Obviously, Jalen Brown is one of the ones to go. You said it yourself. McCollum's the other one. The money is far, far off. So let's see what we can do here. You probably have to send a couple of different players from the Celtics.
Yeah, money-wise, yeah. But, again, you probably have to give up, you know, a pick or two. But I feel like it might be worth it at this point, right? Anyway, back to the conversation. What was next? Oh, yeah. So... the Pelicans and the Bulls tried to make a trade.
McCollum makes $24 million, Calvin. Sorry,
that's a lot of money.
It's gonna be a hard sell here.
That's tough without giving up a major asset. You're right. You're like, how much does Bam Melo make?
I mean, we're talking Morris Brown Smart Baines for McCollum. If you're talking about money, and it failed. Like, those four guys are still, they're still a little bit short.
Oh, still not enough. Still not enough. That's unfortunate.
I'm going to throw in Yabusele. Morris Brown, Smart Baines, Yabusele for C.J. McCollum.
Done deal?
That's a done deal. No, I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah, maybe, you know, you can turn it into a three-way thing. This is a team that eats some salary.
That's true. Maybe there could be some more salary involved here, but I don't have the time to work on that. Anyway.
Right. That's fine.
We've got to save at least 20 minutes for some football talk, I think. So what's next?
All right. Well, DeMarcus Cousins is done for the year. Would you call an Achilles I mean, obviously, the worst possible injury is death, right? But let's just discount that as an injury. But
it's like 6 to 10 months recovery time. Man, that one, that was a weird one. Did you see the injury real time by any chance?
I had just flipped over
to the end of that game, and first I was thinking, why are you fighting so hard for that rebound? And second, I think it may have happened when his leg was in the air. It didn't look like he really felt the pain when he hit the ground. It was more like his foot flailed a little bit when it was in the air, and I wonder if that's when it happened. It was very strange.
Well,
but I knew immediately
that
it was an Achilles injury. He was done.
I feel like it happened because he jumped and sort of tried to reach around someone. So he landed with his first foot normally, and his second foot landed like sideways because he was trying to move his body around someone, and it was like twisted and sideways. You know what I mean? I guess here's what I'm wondering. Do you think an Achilles injury is worse than an ACL at this point?
Yes.
I almost kind of do, in terms of like...
Oh, definitely.
Guys recover. Like, if you
so the other thing, the thing about the Achilles, and this is what's always been the problem with the Achilles injury, is that there's really no muscle around the Achilles. That you have muscle sort of around your knee, you know, not necessarily in your kneecap or... There's mostly cartilage in there or whatever, but you have muscles around your knee where you can sort of try and build up the tendons again and rehab that and work to get strength back in that area. The Achilles tendon is in your ankle, and there's really no muscle around that area that you can use to strengthen when you're coming back from that type of injury. So, yeah, it's very, by all accounts, very painful and very difficult to come back and rehab from that and be the same type of player.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just basing it on Kobe, but just like the other guys the guys who have seen tear their Achilles tendon, they seem to like never be the same player again. And I think it used to be that an ACL tear was worse, but it seems like medical science has progressed more effectively with ACL recovery than it does in Achilles recovery. And
definitely.
So, I don't know. I'm somebody who, I see all the flaws in DeMarcus Cousins in terms of, like, his laziness and just, like, his basketball IQ at times. But, like, I've always appreciated his adaptability and, like, creativity with the ball for his size and just, like, I don't know. He just felt like such a unique guy in the NBA, and he was playing so well this year. And really, because I love Anthony Davis so much is the main thing. Maybe as a Celtics fan, there's a part of you that's like, I don't know, this is such a dark thought to think, but, like, yeah, now Anthony Davis might, you know, end up being more unhappy in New Orleans more quickly. And
yeah.
We can
a lot of people are thinking that, I'm sure. And I don't think that, because I think it's bad karma to think that way. And I just – earlier when I mentioned the Mirotić trade, I didn't realize that it had been it canceled or that it did not go through. But the premise is the same. They don't want to trade Anthony Davis. They're trying to trade four players that will help them. Even though this trade didn't go through, they tried to do it, right? So they want to stay in the playoffs. They want to be relevant. I don't believe that – even if he's unhappy, I don't think he's going anywhere.
Great. Can we talk about why this trade didn't go through real quick? Because it's really interesting for me. So, do you know what the trade was for? It was Mirotić for Omer Asik, who basically is, like, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego in the NBA for, like, since he signed that poison pill deal with the Pelicans. And basically, like, I understand that the nature of the NBA changed around Asik, and the fact that he, like, only has 4-foot range you know, is really going to affect his ability to play. But I would also argue that, like, that Asik is, like, somewhat of a rim-running guy, that, like, that there should still be room for, like, your Biombo types. There's still room to, like, play that type of center versus, because he could still, I guess maybe he can't really guard the perimeter. Anyway, the point is, he's, like, he basically has no value on the Pelicans and would have no value on the Bulls, and was traded for Mirotić, a guy who's, like, after he got punched in the face, has really had a nice season.
Yep, he has.
And they got the Bulls are getting a first round pick for as well in the exchange. So good deal for the Pelicans. Except the Pelicans are not willing to pull the trigger on this deal because Mirotić has a player option for next season, and the two teams could agree if the teams agreed to make Mirotić is next year guaranteed, then the deal would go through. But because they don't want to do that, New Orleans does not want to pay Mirotić for next season at $12.5 million per season, by the way. They don't want to pay his $12.5 million salary for next season for a team that maybe, I guess maybe not with DeMarcus, if they don't, because DeMarcus is a free agent, they might have a little bit of cap money next year, but they don't have a ton of, like, free agent options. They're not going to have a ton of money next year, even if DeMarcus walks. They still don't want to pay Mirotić, a guy who's only making $12 million, for one extra season. Like, that, it seems kind of crazy. I'm sorry?
It's weird, because, I mean, I think it would make them better.
I agree with you, but I guess my bigger point is it's weird to me that this is the point we're at now, and I tie it into the Blake Griffin thing too, because the Clippers traded Blake Griffin, you know, 9 months, and who knows if Blake Griffin is even totally healthy, right? He might look more athletic next year, but he's having a good season in the games in which he's played. Mirotić is having a good season, and $12 million is not that much money, but because of the free agent spending bonanza of a couple of years ago, and, like, even as recently as this offseason, it's just been the notion of this constantly escalating cap. It's like it hasn't been escalating, and it doesn't appear that it's going to be escalating. It seems like all of a sudden, like, those contracts that people signed are almost all universally crippling in some way, and now there's a team out there that could, you know, make Anthony Davis more happy by just giving a guy one extra year. It's not like his player options for 5 years. don't want to pay him one extra year at a completely reasonable rate. You know who else makes $12 million? Jordan Clarkson. There's probably a million guys in the league making $12 million. That's not that much money for a guy who's having a good year, but it's just because it seems like there's such an economic downturn all of a sudden that they don't want to do it.
Yeah, I'm going to look up their salaries right now to tell you who on their team is making $12 million, because I'm sure there's somebody that's close, aside from Ashik.
I think Solomon Hill.
I mean, Ashik's making $11 million himself, so
yeah,
like, or $10.5 million himself. So it's like, why?
Solomon Hill,
why wouldn't
years,
you pay just
million.
A little bit more for Mirotić? You know what I'm saying? Like, I just.
I mean,
New
for
Orleans
them, it's
seems
like
they're trying to pinch pennies here, and I was just giving them trying to build around Davis while Cousins is out, and now they're turning it down because they don't want to pay him next year. They're basically doing exactly what I feel like the Celtics should not be doing in trying to rent a player, and they're going all out with it. They're really just trying to rent the player. They don't want to have to pick him up for next year as well. Which, you
I
know
mean,
what? I mean, if he continues to play well, maybe he would turn the option down anyway and try and get a better deal elsewhere if they don't want to sign him, you know? So this seems backwards to me.
Yeah, I mean, they've clearly been mismanaged. The Pelicans have the seventh highest payroll in basketball right now with a pretty depleted roster if you look at it. But, next year, even without...
I mean, Etuan Moore is making $8.5 million. Are you kidding me? The Celtics
right,
are getting more... The Celtics are getting more out of their... let's see, they've got 3 to 4 players that combined their salaries would make up Etuan Moore's salary, plus Omar... If you throw Omar Asik in there, too, it's not even close that the amount of value they're getting out of these guys on the court compared to their salary. New Orleans is really, I mean, they've got a couple of dogs here.
Well, I mean, I like Drew Holiday kind of, but $26 million. $26 million? That's the killer right there. Drew
yeah.
Holiday making $26 million.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, Solomon Hill's 12.7 is not great, but like, I don't know, 12.7 again, it's at this point is kind of a reason. Except for the fact that Solomon Hill's terrible, but if he was a decent player, the $12 million would be fine. But I mean, that $26 million for Drew. But so yeah, here's the point. Even if they don't re-sign DeMarcus Cousins, at this point, it's actually if you are, a Pelicans fan, there might be a chance it's more likely in a weird way, because he's going to be injured. He's a free agent. I don't know. It's less likely that another team's going to re-sign him. The Pelicans already know what they have in him. Maybe they have a relationship already. Maybe they feel good about him. Whatever team does sign him, obviously, will sign him at a restricted. He's going to be a good deal for somebody. Maybe not even a good deal, but a much cheaper deal. But there's not going to be that many teams with cap space in this offseason. If you're the Pelicans, how much do you even offer DeMarcus Cousins? He's going to be a really interesting question going into the summer.
Yeah, especially with this injury, it's going to be a tough situation for them. We'll have to wait and see what they do. But the team is going to have a difficult decision to make, because obviously he's a star talent. He's an all-star. He can do a lot of things, and they've been playing well together down there. They're in the playoffs for the first time in a long time. Ever, maybe. I don't even know if they've ever made... Actually, they were an 8 seed a few years ago, if I remember correctly. Either way, they've been playing well, and it's disappointing to see a guy like that go down, especially when a team is young and promising like the Pelicans are. So hopefully they find a deal that they like, and they continue to play well, and they make the playoffs. I would like to see them be there. But speaking of playoffs, we got to skip the NBA gambling stuff. We'll talk about it another time, because there's a super duper large game on Sunday. The football.
Really?
Football
like
players.
Like
football season comes to an end on Sunday. Calvin, whose confetti is going to be spraying down from the dome in Minnesota? I don't know. I think
like
this game is going to be a tough one to call. What's that?
Like a Fantastic Bowl or something?
Yeah, Fantastic Bowl. I still don't know what the rules are on saying large, gigantic, super game bowl.
I was about to say, do you remember when it was football. Like the, it was like everyone a few years ago was like afraid of the NFL suing them if they said the phrase Super Bowl? So
yeah.
It was just like everyone kept making subtle allusions to it for a while, and then I feel like it died off and everyone's just saying Super Bowl again.
Well, I think it depends on how prominent you are, because there are certainly radio stations around here that do not have the rights to say that, and they won't say it. They'll call it something else. So I think it still happens. It's just a matter of what the NFL can get out of you, and I think they probably know that they can get literally nothing from us. We have nothing to our names.
I don't know. Maybe I feel like I don't listen to local radio that much anymore, so most of the radio shows I listen to are national. They all say Super Bowl again.
Yeah,
so
they definitely would. They definitely would. They probably have the rights to it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Maybe it's some sort of agreement that a lot of people come to. Anyway.
Yeah.
So
be careful. That's twice now on this show. They're going to fine us, and you're going to pay for it.
Right. This is, like, the least enjoyable Super Bowl matchup possible for me. I was thinking about it.
Really?
Yeah,
even Jacksonville? Come on, really?
I was thinking about it the other day, and I was like, well, I hate the Cowboys more than I hate the Eagles. There's no question. And for the record, I'm essentially going to have to root for the Patriots in the Super Bowl, which like in that respect makes it worse.
Very nice.
Very
nice.
Yeah. The thing that makes the Patriots-Eagles worse than the Patriots-Cowboys for me is that I would also have to root for the Patriots against the Cowboys, but at least in that case, there would be plenty of people on my side. In this Patriots versus Eagles scenario, I'm going whatever place I end up going for this game, I'm going to be the only person there rooting for the Eagles, for the Patriots in all likelihood, and I'm going to have a group of sort of passionate, screaming friends or people I like rooting for the Eagles while I'm sort of passionately screaming for, the great Tom Brady and annoying Patriots to win. So everything about this is terrible.
I love this. I love this. A Giants fan rooting for the Patriots. This is wonderful. This is so good.
Yeah, I'm not happy about it at all. We already signed Pat Shurmur as our head coach, so I can't even pretend to root for our future coach, Bill Belichick. I got nothing.
Bill Belichick. This is good. No, but you know what? I mean, the Giants have beaten the Patriots twice, so you can put in your back pocket and feel a little bit better
That's
about
true.
Rooting for them. It's sort of like rooting for your younger brother or something who you've beaten on the court or field or whatever it is your entire life, and then saying, oh, yeah, you should get one. You should get one. Especially when your younger brother is going up against the bully from down the street who doesn't deserve to be a bully because they've won nothing and they're just a bunch of slovenly people. That's the way I look at Philadelphia. That's the way a lot of people look at Philadelphia, I believe. And I know that you do look at their fan base anyway as that, because how else could you see them as a rational human being? So I totally understand why you're rooting for the Patriots here. I think there are plenty of reasons behind it. I'm just glad to have you aboard.
Well, this is also the problem. I realize CLNS is tied to Boston, but I feel like you guys know that Boston is like a town of obnoxious sports fans, right? I know you're from Boston, but like I don't even mean I just mean it like
sure.
Boston. Mentality, which is like.
We're completely obnoxious. I would like to think that most of us are reasonable about it, but yes, in general, the stereotypical Boston fan is a total a-hole.
Well, and I know the reasons for it. Basically the reason Boston sports fan is what it is today is because of the Red Sox, because you guys had a persecution complex for years, because of the Red Sox Yankees thing and them never winning.
Inferiority complex. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yep. So now like every it's
it's like always you guys against the world, and like anytime anything bad is reported on the Patriots, the like gung-ho Boston fan has to like defend Tom Brady like he's their father or their best friend. You know what I mean? And that's part of it too. It's like all these, like, I have to, somehow I'm friends with Sean Vakie on Facebook, and I got to look at his Facebook account with a picture of Tom Brady's face next to the face of a goat. You know what I mean? Like,
I love
need,
it.
I don't need
Sean,
to
Sean Vakie retweeted this show, by the way, so give props to him.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm glad he did. But I actually like Sean Vakie. I wouldn't be Facebook friends with him if I didn't. It's just more it's emblematic of, like, what I've... Like, why the Patriots sort of annoy me. And it's not... Well, part of it is them, because they do have certain things that are annoying. But you're right in terms of being a Giants fan. Like, there's a part of me that is, like, glad that nobody else has beaten them in the Super Bowl, because I can sort of hold on to that. And if the Eagles do beat them in the Super Bowl, then it's like, yeah, then it just becomes a thing where, like, oh, Patriots can't beat the NFC East. I mean, you know what I mean? It sort of, like, takes away from the Giants specifically. Huh. So that annoys me, but... Look, outside of all that, I do want to talk a little bit about Brady. Well, first of all, who do you think? Let's talk about this game real quick. Are you worried at all about the Eagles' defense, and more specifically about the Patriots' offense if Gronk doesn't play?
I'm a little worried. I think Gronk's going to be fine. I think he's going to play, and I think that he's going through drills, and he's been practicing hard, so. He's just getting over the hump of the stringent concussion protocol in the NFL. It's very strict. We know that, and that's fine, as it should be. So I think that he'll be good to go. He's going to be cleared, in my opinion, and everything will be fine with him. But yes, I'm worried about the Philly defense to a point. I was a little bit worried about Jacksonville's defense, especially once you hit the third quarter in that game, and you're wondering, well, wait a second. This doesn't look good. They're just running all up and down the field with the Patriots. They're sticking to them. Their offense is doing everything they need to do to win. This doesn't look good. And lo and behold, yet again, a team doesn't finish a game, and a team falls apart with 10 minutes to go, or with 12 minutes to go. That's where I sort of reserve the confidence and say, even if the Eagles' defense looks awesome for 3.5 quarters, if the Patriots can also play pretty well on defense against Nick Foles and a above-average offense on the other side, then I think the intangibles will win out and the Pats will win another close game. Down the stretch, making the right decisions, coaching decisions, timeout, clock management, all that cliche crap that the Patriots are always better with, and just knowing how the Super Bowl goes, just having the experience of being there, I feel like the intangibles are a big deal in the Super Bowl, and if they were seeing a team like Atlanta back there again, or like the Giants, it got them twice in that three-year time frame, then I would be worried about the overall outcome. But I think this is going to be a close game, and the Patriots win because of the coaching factor.
Yeah, I do have to say, and you know, obviously, like, does Belichick really need like any more compliments now? You know, I don't. There's not really anything I could say about Belichick except for that. Like, I look at the Patriots defense, and I'm like. Individually, who on this team is even good? Gilmore? Like, the Patriots defense
Meh.
Was terrible, and then
yeah.
and then it wasn't. You know, and then it became like they gave up the least points in the NFL, I think, over the last 10 games of the season. And I still don't think that when it comes to talent, that team is defensively is very good at all. And yes, they're so brilliantly schemed that, like, they managed teams down anyway, but I don't think that's a super talented defense, do you?
Well, they're clearly cheaters. Obviously cheaters.
Well, yeah. I'm obviously cheaters. That's fine. I'll accept that. Well.
Do you resort to that at all in any argument? Do you bring that up? Because there are people that are totally bringing that up. There's been some Philadelphia writers that are saying things about how they cheated back then. They're going to cheat again. Once a cheater, always a cheater. Do you feel that way at all? Or are you still Mr. Giants fan? We beat them. It doesn't matter if they cheat.
I mean, that's sort of in the same vein. If I was that guy, I would also have to be, like, complain about referees and the NBA guy. You know what I mean? Like, that's not my nature, so, like, I'm not...
The Mike Munger Giants fan.
Right, yeah, exactly. Mike Munger, also a Giants fan, I'm sure talks about the Patriots cheating all the time, right? We don't have enough conversations about that for me to really know, but I
sort of, for the most part, look at things at face value, and especially, like, there's different levels of getting caught cheating, and, like, the impact of filming a practice on the sideline, do I think that's, like, that single-handedly has carried the Patriots, and, like, I'm sure, even if there's, like, other cheating schemes that I don't know about, which, you know, I'm not saying there aren't. Maybe there are. I know Patriots fans like to, like, your team cheats too and, like, try to like, come up with other ways. And I know, you know, NFL teams have gotten caught in various shenanigans. But, like, do I think that, like, any of these are the reasons why the Patriots aren't good? No, that's ridiculous.
All right, good.
Oh, wow. Breaking news. The Kansas City Chiefs traded Alex Smith to the Redskins.
Huh.
You heard it here first. Yeah. So I guess Kirk Cousins is gone. That's good news. Good news for me because Kirk Cousins is much better than Alex Smith. Just saying. I'm just saying.
Interesting.
Much better. Yeah. Especially in that offense. Yeah.
Breaking NFL news on January 30th. I feel like they are definitely the opposite of Major League Baseball. Can you imagine Major League Baseball announcing a trade right before the World Series? There's no way it would happen. They keep everything quiet until after it's over. I think most leagues do that. And the NFL letting this out. Interesting.
Well, yeah,
big deal.
I think
what do you think they're trying to do? Take away from the game?
You hit on the real point, which is that, like, why are teams allowed to do this before the Super Bowl? In the NBA, you can't make a trade in the NBA Finals. You know what I mean?
Isn't it kind of a disadvantage? I mean, not to say that either Philadelphia or the Patriots even want Alex Smith. Not to say that, because they don't, obviously. But say another prominent player got moved right now. Maybe a defensive end. Maybe a big cornerback gets moved right now. Doesn't it give a disadvantage to those teams in the Finals, in the Super Bowl, because you could have had a shot at that player?
Yeah, this is why you're not allowed to do it. And obviously, if you allowed the Patriots and Eagles to make moves too, then it would create a scenario where, like, Super Bowl teams would be loading up talent all the time, right? So it boggles my mind that the trade's happening right now. Yeah, you've never seen. Can you imagine? Yeah, in the NBA where, like, there's so much value in individual players. Like, if LeBron and the Warriors were, like, stuck in this thing where neither one could make a deal, and the Celtics were over here trading for Anthony Davis. Well, you know what I mean? Like, that'd be infuriating.
Yeah, that'd be brutal.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
In any case, yeah, this is crazy to me. But I do want to ask you about Brady a couple of things real quick. So I was thinking about sort of Brady's legacy, you know, and I guess because of all the GOAT-related Facebook posts that I've been getting from Sean Backe. I don't disagree at this point about Brady being the best of all time, but I don't think that it's like an undisputable argument about it. And more importantly, I realize that, like, the reason that I think that Brady is the best quarterback of all time has nothing to do, not nothing, but has, like, less to do than a lot of people will argue. The fact that he has his 5 rings and, you know, maybe even 6, and I guess part of the conversation is that, like, I don't think winning the Super Bowl changes Brady's or Belichick's legacy at all, and thus I'm sort of more okay with him winning than I am the Eagles winning their first Super Bowl. Since he's already sort of the greatest, but I guess my point is like, I kind of only have thought of him as the greatest, not because he came back on the Falcons, or, you know, whatever the Super Bowl was before that, what was it, Seattle, right? I kind of think of it because he sort of extended his prime and, like, won, you know, last year's and probably this year's MVP, and won, you know, I think he won an MVP a couple years ago. I went back and looked at the numbers because I was curious. And I because I remember Brady, like when they the Patriots sort of had their dynasty won, if that's what you want to call it, and they won like the 3 out of the 4 championships. Brady like was good during that time, but he was never like overwhelming offensively. They always ran a conservative offense. He sort of like if you I guess my point is like in 2007 when they played the Giants, I definitely like didn't already have in my head that that Brady was the best quarterback of all time. He's the best quarterback of all time now, in my opinion, because of the fact that he's gotten better since then. Since 2007, his numbers have been insane. But like back in the day, he wasn't that. And I guess I felt like people put too much on winning, and not enough on like what was actually happening on the field. I don't know. This is getting rambly, I realize, but I'm just wondering like specifically. When did you actually feel like you were watching like the best quarterback ever or whatever?
I think probably at the beginning of this most recent run, I guess a few years ago, even right around that second Super Bowl loss, there were questions, you know, oh, can he get over does Eli Manning have his number? Is he vulnerable? Blah, 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 all this stuff. And the fact that he had not won both of those games and made it clear that he was better than Joe Montana, then people had something to hang on to and question it. But when it started looking like they were going to go back to that first Super Bowl there against Seattle, and I feel like they played really well that entire season. I just thought that might be the beginning of something again, and it turned out to be. I certainly didn't think they were going to win against Atlanta when they were down 28-3, but that thing, they pulled that out too. But just day in, day out, this guy has been coming to work, and I think a lot of it is the system, a lot of it is the coaching staff. It's a combination that makes the two of them great. They feed off each other, Brady and Belichick. But overall, it's still there are still questions about his pure ability to this day. Can he throw the deep ball? Why haven't his feet ever been as quick as some of the other quarterbacks in the league? He's never been a runner. He's not the greatest athlete out there, but he is probably the hardest worker at the position in the NFL. And I think a lot of people would say that as well. So that's what makes Tom Brady different than everybody else. He's there before everyone, whatever cliche you want to use. He gets there first. He leaves last. He watches more film than anybody else. He's a damn robot out there. So I feel like if he didn't have a human body that was going to break down over time, regardless of how he treats it, he would be at the top of his game forever, because I think mentally he's the best ever. And that if you could take his brain and just put it in a robot, that would be, nobody else would win, because it would just be too perfect. Cause I think that this guy puts in the work mentally to actually elevate his game, even though he's not the greatest athlete there is.
I guess this I'm thinking about this so much because it ties into the greater conversation in sports that we're having all the time about greatness and how much of greatness is directly tied to winning, and how much of greatness, like, at what point does winning start to become diminishing returns for greatness? Like, obviously we can agree that, like, a certain amount of winning is probably necessary to like reach a certain level of historical greatness, but like if at a certain point, I don't know. I hear what you're saying right here,
Doesn't it change with the next great player? Like if LeBron James goes on a run and wins the next 4 championships, he's going to be looked at as the greatest, and then you're going to have to win 8 if you want to be great. Otherwise, one of those other guys, you know?
I guess I don't think that's fair. I think LeBron has 3. So like now that LeBron has 3, I don't want to have the conversation about however many finals appearances he has. I don't want to have the conversation about like you know, him losing to Dallas. I just want to have a conversation about, like, where he's at in terms of his actual ability. Like, that's it. Like, he's, I don't know. And I think about Tom Brady, and I think about, like, if Seattle had run into the end zone, and if Atlanta had, like, kept throwing the ball, even it's like the Patriots would not have been, the Patriots' offense would like not have been able to come back if Atlanta didn't also become conservative and allow the Patriots to get the ball back after a bunch of three and outs. So
okay.
As well as Tom Brady played in the second half, like Atlanta had enough of a lead on them that like it would have been difficult for them to come back. So let's say Atlanta, you know, doesn't. Yes, it was a great comeback. I don't mean to take away from the Patriots, but like for that to happen, both, you know, Atlanta also has to choke. So. I can't assume Seattle runs it in the end zone and Atlanta
sure.
holds on in that game. Tom Brady has, you know, 4 Super Bowl losses and 3 Super Bowl wins.
Okay, but so
does that mean
I agree that a lot of
go ahead. Are you muted? Yeah, so he has 4 Super Bowl losses, 3 Super Bowl wins. Like, does that mean that he's a we don't look at him the same way? I guess that's what I'm asking. I don't know if you're gone. Or what, unfortunately. Maybe you just cut off. Maybe you'll send me an email in a second. Hopefully. I'm still on the air. Be the end of our show, as has been known to happen at times. In any case, yeah, I just don't know exactly how to quantify. If we talk about Tom Brady with 3 Super Bowls, and then we just think about, like, yeah, they use a running game at defense, and Adam Vinatieri won those Super Bowls. Am I looking at Tom Brady the same way? I think I am at this point in looking at his career, because to me, like, what makes him now the greatest is the fact that he is still winning MVPs at 39. He became greater as he got older. But like I don't think that you need the Super Bowls to validate that at this point. But it seems like that's the only criteria. Like, Peyton Manning won 2 Super Bowls. I don't think we should look at him as a loser anymore. We should look at the entirety of his career. And the only reason why I think Tom Brady has slipped past him is probably because of his neck injury. Like, and the fact that Peyton Manning, you know, didn't necessarily have great playoff stats. But even that is like, I think he did enough to get past that. To me, it's just longevity that makes that argument for Brady at this point. In any case, Rory is gone, so hopefully I even finish this sentence. Why don't we just wrap it up here where we can cut it off later. All right, so yet another show that ends with technical issues. Have a good night, everyone. We will talk to you next week. Bye.
All right. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me?
Hey,
all right.
Rory?
Can you hear me now?
I can, yes.
Okay, I don't know what happened there, and sorry for the few minutes. I don't even know if anybody's still listening, but if you are, we're back. And it's funny that this has happened multiple times talking about the Patriots. It's almost as if they're listening and cutting my internet or something. It's very, very strange, Calvin. Anyway, as I was trying to say before I got cut off, You have to. You
That's
obviously
funny.
Have to factor in the fact that everybody else is stupid, right? As far as Tom Brady being able to win all these games and the Patriots winning games in the final seconds because teams aren't doing the proper things and their execution is poor. But I'm also not trying to take anything away from LeBron James when we say that he's gone to the NBA Finals and lost multiple times. So if Brady had lost, I still don't think you take anything away from their greatness. My point only is that if they don't end up winning those games, the people that are focusing on the players that won in a shorter period of time, a la Joe Montana and Michael Jordan, they have something to hang their hat on. They have an argument to make there because those players did win, even though maybe a Brady or a LeBron was at the top for a longer and sustained period of time.
I guess I'm just interested in this concept of like of just the moments. Like we're basically like defining Brady, for example, his legacy based on like a couple of moments, and that's why I was interested in like if Seattle runs it into the end zone, and we don't even need to talk about Atlanta. We can say if Adam Vinatieri misses that field goal, right? It's like there's just examples from basically every Patriots Super Bowl season, right?
So many things. Isn't there a point where it's but isn't there a point where it becomes a trend and it's because there has to be another reason for it? There's other factors involved, and it's the execution of the team and the mentality of the team and the player. He's the leader. He's if they had a Cam Newton on this team and Bill Belichick was trying to scheme everybody up and get them to do their job, blah, 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 anybody, name another player. If they had Alex Smith, if they had Kirk Cousins, any of these guys, I don't know if they would be the right leader to let everybody or to have every single player do what the coach says. And I feel like Tom Brady brings a mental aspect to the game that is surpassed by no one. And that's why people have to respect him, and that's why he's as good as he is. So that's why you have to consider him to be great. And it's because of those moments in the clutch where everybody else is doing the right thing. They're looking at him as the leader throughout the entire season, as the guy that is just fitting into the place that was given to him, and that's why this team succeeds.
I guess to me, what you're talking about is clutchness, right? And yes, and clutchness can be something that's tied to greatness, but it seems like when a player reaches a certain level of great, that people only want to use clutchness as like the argument for like where they rank amongst the greats. Like nobody says Tom Brady's not one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, but like the argument for him being the guy, like it seems to be predicated more on clutchness than just on like overall great. Like I don't hear people talking about what I said. It's like he's winning MVPs at 39, and like to me like I said earlier, after you dropped off, it's like the only reason I feel like he's outlasted Peyton Manning has nothing to do with 5 Super Bowls. It has to do with the fact that Peyton Manning broke his neck, and Tom Brady's been dominant in ways that like no other 39-year-old has. Like it's the MVPs to me at this point that are like putting him up there. It's not his 5th Super Bowl, because if he has 3 instead of 5. He's still already a winner, even if he has 2 at this point, like Peyton Manning. He's already a winner. He's already played well enough consistently for me to, like, consider him clutch. Now you're just talking, I don't know, you're talking, yeah, he won Super Bowls, but, like, I don't know. But because when you reverse it, all right, and you talk about guys who are
he also
clutch,
has 3
but, like,
or 4
enough,
Super Bowl MVPs as well, so don't forget that.
You know who the greatest postseason hitter of all time is in baseball? It's Carlos Beltran. Do you feel like he's the best baseball hitter of all time? No, because Beltran hasn't hit a certain criteria of greatness for you to start considering clutchness at all.
Sure.
And that's what's fascinating
to
me.
That's why guys like Dan Marino are always going to be in the conversation. Brett Favre, Peyton Manning, those guys are always going to be in the conversation, even though Tom Brady has won far more than the most of them. Drew Brees has thrown for 4,000 more yards in his career than Tom Brady has. And people are probably not going to look at him as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. But you know what? He sustained it, And you should look at him as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And Drew Brees is going to continue to play, and the way that they play down there in New Orleans, he's going to continue to throw for yards for the next couple of years, in my opinion. So you're going to have to consider a guy like that to be one of the greatest, even though he's never going to come close to the amount of Super Bowls that Tom Brady has won, let alone been to. So that's where the flaw is in that type of an argument, you know. So I'm with you on that
one.
You can't just take the championships and say this guy was great, because there might be a player that spent just as much time in the league, meant just as much to his team, and just didn't get.
Yeah, and the thing that people are doing with Brady is like it's an even more common thing in basketball, right? Because of the fact that there are five people on the court and the notion, and I actually somewhat agree with it more in basketball, which is like, it's hard for me to put anyone in the pantheon who like doesn't have an NBA title, or you know even two. But once you get past two, I don't see how the argument that Bill Russell is the greatest ever because he has 11 is like a ludicrous argument to me. I can't even if you just look at his career numbers. I realize that rebounding wasn't like a major thing. I don't want to get too deep into the Bill Russell wormhole, but like. The fact that offensively, Bill Russell was in that time where centers had huge advantages was an average offensive player. I don't understand how anyone thinks he's the greatest basketball player of all time.
Well, would you say that he's the most transcendent basketball player of all time?
No, because he was at in terms of transcendence, he was at such a disadvantage because of the wattage of the league. I mean, Jordan's obviously the most transcendent basketball player of all time because of the way he was marketed, because of Space Jam, because of the globalism of the NBA, like Bill Russell's not even close.
But they didn't have to change the game for Michael Jordan. They literally had to make changes to the game because Bill Russell was too dominating. That's the way I look at it.
But they also changed the game because of Wilt's dominance. It's like if you look at it that way, it's also because basketball in terms of rules was fundamentally flawed.
So I would compare Russell and Chamberlain as probably the most transcendent players of all time, and you'd have to have a debate on the two of them, in my opinion. But greatest to me is different than that, and I think that transcendent can be just as important, though.
How would you define transcendence? I guess I'm not thinking of it as the same way as you are.
Changing the way a game is played because of a single player over a long period of time. Like if for instance, all of these rule changes in the NBA, as far as the charge rule and the half circle below the basket, if all of those were done because LeBron James was doing so much to get to the hoop and just affect the game night in, night out, year in, year out, and they made those changes because of him, I would put him in that category of transcendence, but that's not the way it works anymore. And when you look at a guy like Chamberlain or you look at a guy like Russell, they literally had to do something because of those guys.
So honestly, at this point, if we're talking about the standard of changing the way the game is played, I might have to argue for Steph Curry as the most transcendent player of all time, considering the way that he essentially has changed basketball.
I would hear that argument. I certainly would. And that he is definitely one of the guys that's modernizing the NBA and making it a different era and putting emphasis on the three-pointer. And it's funny. I saw something that Larry Bird said basically that about – three-pointers that Danny Ainge had told him back in the day. And when you think about it, if you shoot 35% from the three-point line, you're going to score more points than if you shoot 50% from inside the arc. You'd score 105 points if you shoot 35% on 100 shots, whereas if you shot 50% on 100 shots, you'd score 100 points. So very wise thinking by Danny Ainge back in the day, loving the three-pointer, and teams are finally adopting it now. Anyway, we're going further than we thought we would. Do you have anything else you want to throw out there about this game? I think the Patriots win in a close one. How do you feel?
Yeah, I don't know what happened to my voice. Yeah, I think the Patriots will win by six or seven. So, we'll see how that goes.
Fan. You're rooting for them. Welcome to the team, Calvin.
I'm with you guys.
Plenty
Let's
of space
go.
On the bus.
Let's go, Pats. Let's go, big silver, silver star. I don't know what color you guys are. Let's go kind of reddish, reddish and blue.
They're going to be wearing white this weekend, so.
Oh, okay. Let's go big white. That doesn't sound right.
Let's go white.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, that doesn't sound right either.
Nope, it doesn't, especially with the state of the nation going on tonight. Anyway, I'm not on that man's side. I'll tell you that much. I love all people.
Right,
All right, Calvin. Let's say goodbye. What do you say?
Yeah, I already said goodbye once, so I don't know if you want to edit that out after you hung up. But then you came back and we did more. So.
I'm just gonna rely on the people. I'm gonna rely on the good people of Blog Talk Radio to cut out all that dead air. And if they don't cut out the dead air, I'm gonna rely on the good listeners out there to just listen to nothing.
Maybe tweet it out.
We realize what's happening when the podcast is an hour and 22 minutes and not an hour like it almost was. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. And if you did fight through that dead air, really, we do appreciate that.
Thank you.
Have a great night. Go Pats. Calvin's with us.
Good night, everyone. Sorry, I forgot my line.
Possible!